everybody, and welcome to Lion of the Air Suite podcast, episode 76. And don't worry, your ears are not deceiving you. Yes, we are doing two episodes within a matter of days. I know it was like a few weeks between 74 and 75, but 76 is coming hot off the heels of episode 75. And that's because, well, after the discussion me, Chris and Will had about there being no pressure, Chris, most of all, saying that we'd walk it, everything would be fine. Of course, it wasn't fine. But before we get into all that, joining me tonight, again, is Mr. Chris Manning. Chris, not coming midway through this time.
No, hello, how are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, I'm mixed emotions. Oh. I don't think I'm quite as fuming as some. But I think my pessimism and Will's pessimism was definitely warranted on the last week's pod. And speaking of Will, he's also back for his second appearance. Will, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Are you?
Not too bad. And also joining us for this special podcast is Mr. Mark Isles. Mark, how is thee?
Overworked, underpaid.
Aren't we all? Mm-hmm. Aren't we all? I don't even get a pay. I've got nothing. I'm skint. Being a uni student is shite. But we go on regardless. And speaking of shite, Bolton Wanderers 0, Bury 0. I feel like we've seen the same match for the last 4 weeks now against Chesterfield, especially matches against Scunthorpe and bloody hell, the other. Who else did we lose 1-0 to? Oldham. Feels like, even though we managed to not lose this one, feels like the same old story of the last few weeks, Mark.
Yeah, it's nervous stuff, isn't it? I wonder how much nerves do play a part in it. I think there's been a lot of kind of anti Phil Parkinson sentiment, hasn't there, as far as the tactics go, but I'm damn sure he doesn't tell the lads to knock it 60 yards every time they get it from the back. It's I think a lot of nerves is coming in the player and people are playing it safe. So yeah, you're right, I think we've had the same game pretty much three times in a row. I think they did okay at Oldham, they adapted to the conditions and such, but either side of that, pretty average stuff at Scunthorpe and then at home to Bury. You can't really defend the performances too much, but them are the times we're living in.
Absolutely, absolutely. We said on the last podcast, Chris and Will, that James Henry had to start this game, and he didn't, but he came on at the 60th minute mark, and I thought he made the difference, Chris. Obviously, he didn't make too much of a difference because we didn't manage to get the winner. But once he came on, opportunities started coming a lot more freely, didn't they?
Certainly did. I was advocating him coming on at half-time, personally. Yep, I think performances warranted an immediate change, if not even before half time. It was quite obvious, I thought, after the first 20 minutes, what we needed to bring to the game in order to get something out of it. And I was disappointed it took so long to get Henry on, but I was also pleased for Henry and that his performance was so greatly improved from the last time I saw him, making him an obvious starter, I think, on Saturday.
I think if he doesn't start, I think that could sway a lot of people who are kind of on the fence, middling. I think if Henry doesn't start, if changes aren't made, that could definitely sway opinion negatively, couldn't it, Will?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a big fan of James Henry. I mean, I know a lot of people aren't, and they're very keen on the team staying the same. But as I said last night, I think the team does need to be changed, whether it's just one or two, or whether it's mass changes. But I thought one player that came back and was welcomed was Andrew Taylor. I think he did very well at left back, yeah. Brilliant, solid performance from him again.
I think the only mistake he made was he kind of sliced a clearance, mistimed a header, and then got a full-on Matt Beaver's clearance right in the fucking nose, which I do not envy that. I do not envy on that. And apart from that, he was brilliant. I don't think he misplaced a pass. He's such a calming influence on that side. He was able to get on the ball, actually run forward. I thought he linked up with Vela very well on numerous occasions. And we looked a lot more secure on that side for his presence. Would you agree, Mark?
Yeah, to a degree. Sorry,
go on, Mark, yeah.
Sorry, I apologise, I'm butting in there. Excuse me. I thought they were a bit too narrow, I think, throughout Tuesday night. I thought there wasn't enough width, using Taylor more, using Morace more, could have just spread the game a little bit more, but I thought it was all a bit back to front because they'd done so well to close down the space and in the middle of the park. And Morace, up until a couple of times first half, but really didn't get much of a chance to run at his wing back at all. Really, didn't get much space in front of him. Taylor, as you say, didn't really put much of a foot wrong, but I don't think he had a lot of the ball. I don't think he really used the width as well as they could have done. Yeah. And that's something they'll have to do at Port Vale because it's a massive pitch.
Really? I didn't know, but it's interesting because I think there's been a lot of talk about the formation recently and the lack of changing. And I think there has been a change, obviously, but when Medine's playing, we were playing a 3-5-2 with, you know, Alf and Medine with Avella or Pratley in behind. And now it's more of a 3-4-3, kind of what Wigan played when they were good under Martinez. And it's the combination of Pratley and Vella behind Alf, and it's just, I imagine this is what this formation was on against Oldham as well. It's just not working, is it, Chris? Because, I don't know, there's too many, I think there's too many midfielders. We just had, what, Derek, Spearing, Pratley and Vella, and whilst they were playing in different positions, they all kind of got the same, you know, they all got the same ideas and same kind of tenacity, and that's where Henry really should have come in.
Yeah, I mean, I can see where Parkinson's coming from with his tried and tested formation that is loath to change too often. But I wonder whether he's, you know, he's set us up a little bit too negatively against that sort of opposition. I question whether, you know, you definitely need to, so, you know, semi sort of defensive midfielders. But then again, did Derek or Spearing play particularly defensively? Derek just sort of wandered around a little bit, looking a bit lost. Excuse me. And Spearing was a bit hamstrung, I thought, by the booking he received. So I would like us to have gone back to what I said and to take a more of an aggressive stance and to start the game on the front foot as well for once, as opposed to being a little bit more reactive, maybe try to be a bit more proactive. But, you know, the game ended up being what it was. We started off fairly strongly, but it took a long time until we had a first shot on goal, which was disappointing. We didn't seem to really take the game to them, and that's what I was hoping we would do.
I think what Mark said earlier, I think people are scared. I think they're nervous. It's understandable. I don't know if any of these players, I extremely doubt it, have ever been in this sort of dominated position. I don't think any of them are used to winning more than fucking one match every 3 weeks. And so this season must have been quite the shock. And now when it's coming up to it, they haven't managed to get the job done in good time. Now the nerves are setting in. I can imagine it's quite a daunting thing and quite a lot of pressure. But
it doesn't really bode well for next season, then, does it, if we get promoted, if they can't handle winning a few games
well,
in this
I guess
league?
They're more used to being in scraps,
if that's what the suggestion is.
Then, you know, winning runs. It is a strange thing, I think. But, like, a lot of discussion has been going on about Parkinson's, you know, tactics and his lack of ability to adapt to about Medine. And I think it's what I've been saying all season. We've said it on this podcast numerous times about if Medine gets injured, we're fucked, and that is seemingly correct. But what I want to, before I throw it to you, Will, about your thoughts on kind of Parkinson's adaptability, I do want to defend him like a little bit, because as we discussed in quite a lot of detail last show, Parkinson has adapted quite aptly on about two or three different occasions when he's had to change his formation that he's come up with that started to work. So when Matt Davis came out, he had to change. When Amiobi and Clough were taken away, he had to change. And when Lafondre was brought in, again, he had to change again. And now, but the only problem is with each of those occasions, they took a couple of weeks to get things moving. It took a bit of time. And now we don't really have that to adapt to Medine's loss, which is seemingly going to be for the rest of the season. So is all the criticism he's coming in for valid, or is it? Are we expecting too much of someone to, you know, ring wholesale changes to this team that have played in this way all season? Is it a bit unfair on us to predict some, expect so much from Parkinson?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it is Parkinson to blame particularly. Like obviously his team selection, it needs altering a little bit, but I don't think his tactics are particularly to blame. I mean, there's not a lot he can do in the way of changing it up because we have had such generally a solid team all season. And, you know, why would he change that? But it's getting to the point where we're knowing that we're without Medine, really, potentially for the rest of the season. I mean, we've got to change it. But whether he has an alternative formation or a system in place, I don't know, because it just seems like he's trying to use the same one that he had with Medine without him. And it's just clearly not working because, as we saw last night, we're just hoofing balls up to Lafondre, sorry. I mean, obviously, he's being bullied by two centre-halves, which are both 6'5", you know, and it's just impossible for him. So whether that means we now go two up front, whether we stick with one, I just don't know. But I don't think Hockenson can particularly be to blame for that, because he's kind of running out of options in the way of strikers. I mean, Connor Wilkinson's your only other really target man, but he's obviously not proved himself at all, really. I would have liked to see Viv play, to be honest, last night, or at least get a few minutes at the end. Mm-hmm. Notice he came back onto the bench last night. But really, a little bit needs to change, but I don't think Parkinson's massively to blame for that. It's just what he thinks is right, really. But, yeah.
What's your take on it all, Mark? I mean, you know, he's coming for some heavy criticism now. Is it all his fault? Is there much else he can really do? Like, what do you think?
I just think that the players sometimes have got to be a little bit braver in midfield, and instead of, you know, getting these 40-yard balls over the top from De Vrij or from Weitz or from Beavers, come and get the ball. You know, I mean, Jay Spearman was doing that at Oldham. He was doing it to a degree at Scunthorpe as well, but when the space got closed down, all of a sudden it becomes more direct. They've got to find a way around it. Now, I said about the width before. I don't think they used the width as well as they probably could have done last night. But I do think the players just got to be braver. You know, this isn't the manager saying, you know, every time you get the ball, you've got to try and find Alfie's head. There's no way on earth a right-minded manager would ever say that. We know that he likes to get the ball forward. We know that he likes to play off a front man. And I think with Lafondre, he's hoping that, you know, he'll get in off the shoulder and get in behind him. And he did do a couple of times, and the shot that hit the bar and may or may not have gone over the line was perfect point in example sort of thing. But I think, no, you know, you've mentioned Henry there. I think talking to him after the game, he was 50-50 about Henry last night. He didn't know what to do. He thought, you know, I don't want to give Adam Lafondre yet another strike partner. Let's try and keep some semblance of normality there. So he's gone with Vela in the number 10 role again. I'm not too sure with Vela at that, you know, in that role. I think he's better in the 8-6, you know, a little bit deeper, getting more involved, getting on the ball a little bit more. I'd like to see him put James Henry there behind Alfie, a little bit more mobile, does a bit more running, a bit more composed on the ball as well, and it gives Josh a bit more. Bit more to get his footing, really, and just influence the play a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. And Chris, you were so positive on the last show. You were, you know, almost nonchalantly expecting us to win. So what was your thoughts on, you know, on the match? What would you change, I guess? What do you think of Parky and his team and that?
It's a hard one, because he can only work what he's got to work with, and obviously in this important time of the season, why wouldn't you revert to what you know and what's been successful for you? It makes little sense to change it, I think, as much as we might want him to. I was had a conversation with the mate the other day. We were talking about the likes of Proctor and whether they might have worked in this formation better than Wilkinson has, for example. Yeah, and although Proctor, obviously, it was fairly disastrous with us. I think that sort of player with a bit more experience, a bit more about him, than Wilkinson or Long or Clayton, for, you know, to name the other two as well, might have been a better option. But, you know, that ship sailed. But I don't blame Parkinson for starting and for having us shaping up the way that we did, because it makes sense in that sort of context. As I said previously, it would just be a bit more of an attacking outlet on things. I would have maybe started the game with Henry and Long, perhaps, and stretched the game right from the very start. And I agree with Mark said about the width, because I thought Moraes was easily the most dangerous player, the only one really capable of creating anything. Mm-hmm, yeah. But there was nobody on the end of it. I mean, there was one particular moment in the second half when he floated in a beautiful cross, and Prattley, you know, I've only seen it once in real time, so I apologise to Darren Prattley in advance if I'm incorrect in what I say, but he seemed to duck out of it a little bit, where I wondered whether you might get someone like Kevin Davies just chucking himself at the ball. Yeah. You know, he might get hurt. Yeah, you very well might get hurt, but there's a better chance that you'll score a goal.
I thought the exact same. It was a great ball, probably the best he'd done all day, and it was agonising.
Yeah, definitely. And so I think that the comment about nerves and about taking the easy option is definitely valid. We saw that on more than one occasion last night. From my own point of view, I had a few mates over at Bury fans. We had a good time before the game, looking forward to it. It was my birthday as well. I'd had it built up for weeks and weeks and weeks in my mind. This is going to be an absolutely brilliant and a brilliant sort of experience, a positive one as well for us, because we played well despite not getting the results in a couple of games. But yeah, well, it never happened. It was just such a disappointment. And it makes you wonder about Saturday and then the following Sunday, doesn't it? You can only hope that. I'd rather we weren't playing Port Vale, or we were playing the teams in opposite weeks. That we're playing Peterborough this week, with their safety being pretty much assured, and Port Vale the week after, with their relegation then being confirmed. I might be more confident going into the two games. I remain confident because I don't think, you know, given the last 5 years we've had, to sort of expect the worst is just a little bit predictable. And you know, why should you live your life that way? So yeah, I still fancy us, Dan. It might be a fool's hope, that's still a fool's sort of belief, but I think you've got to be like that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about Prattley there, and Mark, I want to ask you, since Prattley's come back in, he came back in at the start of our last good kind of run of wins, but I thought, I've seen him, you know, in the Chesterfield game and now this game, and maybe he's playing out of position, I imagine he's fucking knackered coming back from such a long injury and playing every minute, playing most minutes of every game since, but I'm he just seems like same old Prattley to me. I don't think, and I know you're a fan, and I admire all the effort and the work ethic and whatnot, but with so many different midfielders in that team, I don't know what he's added which others aren't providing.
I think when he got into the team, I think adrenaline got him so far, and then you start to catch up a bit with yourself, and maybe the time out of the team that he spent on the side lines recovering from the injury might just be catching up with him a little bit. I know he's nursing a bad hamstring, and he's gone out there and done a job when normally speaking he'd be out of the team. You know, I think Parkinson just needs those extra legs in midfield and try and, you know, go get a bit of an engine in there. And I know he rates him, the job he does, highly. You know, I think the ability to play through pain might well be revisited tonight when we're talking.
It will, I'm sure it will.
So yeah, I think Pratt's, you know, may have run his race now. If I'm honest, I think, you know, you can see it's affecting him a little bit. I think confidence wise, he's taken a bit of a knock the last couple of games. And I know that Parky mentioned that he'd done his hamstring, and he's also got some stitches in the back of his head as well for his troubles from last night, so yeah. It wouldn't surprise me at all now for the weekend at Port Vale if he doesn't play.
Yeah, I think it certainly makes sense, cause I think, while I say I admire the work ethic and what he's done since he's come back in, I just think he's not offering enough creativity wise. I think Henry coming in for him is the right move, and I think, I don't know, Chris, do we change the formation up for Port Vale, or does the three at the back stick? I mean, we have to go all out now, because one slip up now and it's going to be costly.
So that just comes back to my point about why start with that mentality? Why not go and try and put a couple of goals away early on and settle everybody down and then maybe start to enjoy our football for the first time in a few weeks? So I would change the formation, and I would certainly start more attackingly with the likes of Long and Henry in the team from the start. Prattley being injured with his head, maybe not a bad thing, as it forces that particular change and maybe forces the shape. But I'd definitely like to see Vela drop back a little bit and let Henry take that spot, that number 10 spot. I think that's where he's best suited. And obviously, it sounds like we're not going to have Big Gary back in the team for whatever reason, which is a shame. But ultimately, I think our destiny's in our own hands. And I think if we're the ones that go forward and sort of take it, we can do it, because we've shown that we can start quickly. And we just got to go out there and get it sorted.
Mm-hmm. I think the main problem with going to like a more four at the back system is that there's no right back, and Dorian Devic's done so well since he returned. He was very good again last night. It's mad seeing him be as good as he was when he first came in. But I don't want to see him at right back and then everything to go to shit. And I know Reece Wabara seems kind of lost at the wayside now. Laurie Wilson's obviously out for the rest of the season, it seems. So is the lack of right back position kind of halting us from going to a more direct 4-4, well, four at the back, all out kind of more of attacking formation, Will?
Yeah, I mean, I think the three at the back, it worked at first, obviously, because we went on a run of wins. But the four at the back just seems to add a bit more solidity. I mean, at the moment, the defence hasn't really proved to be an issue. I mean, I must say that Steves and Wheaton did an excellent job of keeping James Vaughan and Tom Pope quiet last night. I think that has to be commended, but I think a lot of people have mentioned today that we've kind of set up not to concede, but it's meant that we haven't then gone to score either.
Yep.
So whether that means that, like Chris said before, we need to use the wings a lot more, and whether that means, you know, you introduce out-and-out wingers rather than wing-backs maybe, I don't know, but I thought the two wing-backs did do very well last night, but it's just whether that's then part of the changes, you know, whether you play Henry out wide or whether, as Mark said, you put him in the number 10 role, whether you introduce Clayton out wide even. I mean, I know Mark said that he didn't know why Clayton was out. Did you get an answer as to why he wasn't on the bench last night? Was he just out of favour?
Yeah, he was changed to ready to go. He just wasn't in the 18.
Right. Okay.
Just to add to your point there, Will, I think Carachan will be in as well at Port Vale.
I can't forget it, Carachan. Yeah, I'd like to see him given a goal.
A lot of people said that he
about time
deserved a start. I mean, Spearing did well last night up until, obviously, that yellow card. But, you know, maybe even for Prattley, if he can't make it. I mean, Derek had a strong first half, but then the second half when he...
I thought he was kind of... I mean, which was sad for me.
He misplaced a few passes in the second half, and then Parky obviously just decided that was enough and went straight off.
It was like 1:30 segment of play when he misplaced about 3 passes in a row without even looking, just hitting hope. And that was when the fans were really starting to get buggy. And then
he changed it immediately, didn't he? Obviously, so whether Carrickham then comes in as a 6-8 role or whatever, or and then you bring Henry in further forward, but then where does Vela go?
Well, I reckon this is what I'd say. I'd say, and this might be going a bit too gung-ho, I'd say Carrickham and Spearing in the midfield, the two, with Henry on the left, Vela behind Lafondre, and Murray set wide. And I reckon he could well do the DeVita right back thing, because even though I'm scared of it, I thought for a lot of the match when Murray was going forward, DeVita kind of filled in at right back anyway. And he did a fair enough job there. I think his reading of the game recently has been very good, and he didn't look out of sorts. So I could potentially, I hope, because I think that'll just get the fans up as well. Like seeing that he's kind of learned from the obvious mistakes of the last few weeks, and he's now kind of going for it. I think that could kind of set the right tone, and hopefully, as Chris says, make us go out kind of all guns firing. I think all guns blazing. I need to mixed up my metaphors there. Obviously, that's how we used to play at the start of the season in games against Bristol and things like that, where we'd score goals early and then shut up shop. So I could definitely see us reverting back to that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, four at the back seems to be, you know, a reasonable assumption, because DeVita could play right back quite easily, I think. I mean, he's done very well since he's come in, particularly in this league. I mean, I didn't particularly rate him in the Championship, but for what he's kind of done as a filling job this season, he's been very good, so I can't really fault that. And yeah, I would play him at right back and then Taylor at left back. But I think we do need some out and out wide players to help the deliveries. Yeah. Because
we can't
keep hoofing it straight through the middle, because even though we've got a solid spine like in the centre backs and centre mids, we don't have the big target man, which obviously takes on to the point of big Gary Medine.
Oh, since you've segued to it so wonderfully, I think we may as well discuss it. Mark, do you want to kind of explain it, I think, for the lovely listeners? I mean, it's a weird old situation, it seems.
Yeah, it's a strange one, really. It's certainly the first time I've come across something like this, really, since covering Wanderers. You got a player that's obviously picked up a shoulder injury at Southend. A lot made of the fact that he's, you know, Bolton have struggled when he's been out of the team. I think it's something like 10 games now and 4 points that they've taken from 10 games.
And the only win about him was against Grimsby, or at least the games that he didn't start.
Blackpool in the Cup, in the Shaka Khan Trophy, over it's called.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so nothing of any relevance. And, you know, there's nobody else as well in the team that I think we've covered that with, you know, Wilkinson as a vague replacement, but you know, he's out on his own. I think his worth to the team has doubled almost overnight, you know, with the fact that there's no Proctor there to challenge him. And you know, he's got this shoulder injury. I gather there's some ligament damage there. We understand he's seen a specialist. He's been given the okay to go back training. Phil Parkinson said they've been a setback last week. And yet on Tuesday night we come to the conclusion, we ask, you know, what's happening with Gary Medine, and Phil says, well, you know, he's going to have to play through the pain. You know, it's the first time I've heard a manager come out and say, you know, it's his decision. Mm-hmm. As such, it's down to the player whether he comes back and plays. It's an interesting move. to go out and sort of publicly challenge him. But I think it's the right one, really, because, you know what shoulder injuries are like. They can take a long time to come out. And maybe, you know, I don't know whether there's injections or strapping or, you know, I'm not that medically inclined to know, but maybe there are ways and means of improving it for yourself and going out there and scoring a goal that's going to double his value in the transfer market in the summer, because that's, you know, that's a big thing for Gary now, and I can understand his reluctance if he doesn't want to get damaged or anything like that, because he's going to be a free agent and, you know, it's his livelihood. I totally understand that, but I tell you what, if he scores a couple of goals to send Bolton Wanderers up, well, he could virtually charge what he wants.
I think the point is, if he does come back now and puts in the type of performances that get us over the line, then despite everything that's gone before it, despite any criticism, any apt criticism, anything, any complaints, he'll probably go down as, God forbid, a hero, or at least a cult hero of some degree at Bolton Wanderers. But, I mean, Will, you saw Big Gary at the game yesterday.
I did. Yeah, I mean, just before kickoff, he was down on the bench meeting a couple of fans, and I went down and spoke to him, got a picture with him, and then just said, "Are you back for Saturday?" And the direct quote was no. So he didn't obviously then give any additional explanations to that, and I'm not going to make stuff up, obviously. So literally all he said was no. So whether that's for medical reasons or whether it's just purely personal choice, I genuinely don't know.
Coy for a fan, maybe it's like a question. They're not allowed to answer to fans.
Well,
way.
Maybe. I mean, he said no, and then as he walked down the steps, he turned around and then reiterated no again. It seemed like quite a solid thing. But I mean, it seems ridiculous, really, when you think about it, that without him, we can't win. You know, in any other situation, that sounds ridiculous. But going off the stats, it's literally in the situation that we're in, and he is, I think, going to have to play through the pain, whether it is Saturday or at least Peterborough, to prove that he's worth at least another 12 months contract, maybe, or just to get us up, really.
I'd be stunned if, in the current predicament, a bigger club than us would come in for him. So I also understand his own situation where he doesn't want to be fucked for the whole summer and then no club comes in for him at all, and then you're out of a pay pocket. But Chris, what's your take on the whole scenario?
Yeah, I think you just summed it up well there, didn't you? Between you guys, it's a funny one, because whilst other players have probably played through injury worse than that, a shoulder one's a difficult one, because, like you say, being out of contract, it gives him a decision to make. And the fact that the club have, you know, very sensibly not offering contracts to anyone until they know what league they're in, who's to say that he doesn't have an offer on the table already? It's a difficult one. So I understand where he's coming from. Obviously, I'd rather he took the choice that benefited Bolton. But I was going to ask Mark a question about that. There's been a couple of bits and pieces this season with Medine, obviously, with Sheffield United being most notable. Do you think there's something in his character that attracts that, or the way that he carries himself? Or do you think it's maybe psychological, in that he seeks that sort of conflict out almost? It just seems odd, like a bit of a sort of why always me kind of approach to things with him.
Yeah, no, it's a good shout, really. The Balotelli example's quite a good one. There is a certain immaturity about Gary Medine, and that's not a criticism. He just, you know, he's a young lad. I know he's 28, but he's still, you know, a lad. You know, he's been through a lot. I think Bolton offered him a chance, a very good chance, considering, you know, where he was at in the summer that Lenny brought him in, at a very big club. And I don't know. I just feel like there's something that he owes to Bolton still, a little bit. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh on him, but I just feel like he does, if there's any chance of him getting back, that he does maybe just owe the club one, just to put in a couple of games, you know, whether he's on the bench to throw on or what have you. Because, you know, he has rebuilt a reputation. I think people have seen, a good side to Gary Medine in the last 4 or 5 months. I think he took time to win over his doubters again. At Bolton, and there were plenty of those after relegation. You know, there were plenty of people that wanted to see him out the door at the start of the season, and yet the kind of the legends built as the season's gone on. Parky's style has suited him fantastically, and I think he's got some good football out of him. And I'm sure that, you know, if he's looking for options, and if he can prove his, you know, himself just that little bit more, maybe at Bolton, I think he will have options, whether it be at League One level or whether he's looking at sort of a lower end of the Championship. I think he will. And, you know, he's also you know, he's a popular lad as well at Bolton. I don't think he's looking to go anywhere, by the way. Mm-hmm. I think he would like to be able to get a decent deal on the table at Bolton. And if they can push into the Championship, then he's got, you know, a lot stronger hand to play.
Yeah, 100%. But I just don't think we're seeing him again this year. And it's quite worrying, especially with, you know, all the evidence that we have of his, you know, of how ineffective we are without him. It's a shame. If only Parkinson could kind of adapt to that, but as we've said, covered in great detail, it's hard to do it at this stage of the season, and it's just not as easy as getting a team of players in such a nervous kind of state of mind to change the way they play. But it's certainly a strange predicament. But before we move on from Bury, was there any particularly poor / good performances you saw on the night that's worth a shout out, Chris?
I don't think anybody was particularly poor. It was just a sort of toothless performance, really. Likes of Lafondre, I thought, and Murray, thought they both ran themselves into the ground.
Feller as well. I thought Feller.
Yeah, I mentioned as much in my Man of the Match report on the website now. And I've never seen Lafondre jump as much as well. He was doing all he possibly could to aid the cause. He did quite well in the air as well.
He did, but he was against.
He was.
Their number five, especially, was a fucking mountain, and he was very good there, number five, and he was doing his best, but whenever he won anything, there was nobody there.
I thought Pope did quite well in the first half. He gave Beavers something to think about. He reminded me of Kevin Davies a little bit in the way that he was wrestling with Mark Beavers, and it was quite an even contest, that. Obviously, he went off in the second half, which was a bit of an odd one. But no, I don't think anyone was particularly poor. I know he said about Derek, maybe disappointed a little bit, but he had moments in the game too where he did well. So it wasn't a complete write-off. It's just one of those nights, I think, where if we'd have carried on playing till now, we still wouldn't have scored.
Mm-hmm. I bet you will.
No, I don't think anyone was particularly poor. I mean, as Chris just said, you know, Lafondre did quite well considering his pretty helpless position. I mean, in the first 5 minutes, he seemed to be a target for Bury of just snap him. Get him out of the game, you know.
Oh, yeah, winning out on him at first.
Oh, I thought he was injured on first one, the way he went down. But, it just looked like they were trying their best to get him out of the game. As I say, no one was particularly poor. Again, just that 30 seconds from Derek, you know, proved enough for Parkinson. Took him straight off, which was fair enough, you know, because we couldn't then have that weak link, and we couldn't afford that at that point. Bella, I thought, tried his hardest, you know, a lot of sprints, trying to catch up with the defence, pressurise. Prattley, I'm not really sure on Prattley, because obviously when he first came back in, he was brilliant. We won 6 straight, I think, with him, but obviously, as Mark said, his injury's catching up with him a little bit, probably. But I thought it was a bit sad that I don't think Long would have got on had Prattley not been injured, because he hadn't been warming up, and I just couldn't see Parkinson bringing him on.
Long did absolutely sweet FA when he did come on, so.
No, I mean, he did. He did nothing, but I think he would have been an asset, like, for him to bring on perhaps at the same time as Henry, or if not at half time. Because obviously Alf was struggling as much as he then did at the crossbar, and whether it went in or not remains to be seen. But we can't do anything about that now. We just have to push on and hope for the best at Port Vale.
Mm-hmm. I do think Derek and Spearing. I think Spearing, whilst he did all the hard work, he ran about a lot, he fucking went in some great tackles. But I thought his and Derek's passing particularly were both very slack. And as you say, Mark, that kind of lack of getting a foot on the ball in the midfield and lack of options did lead to a lot of aimless high balls from the defenders. But elsewhere, as I already said, I've already sung Andy Taylor's praises. I thought he was my man of the match. I thought he did very well. But David Wheater, again, probably a shoo-in for player of the year at this point. I just thought he was very good. I think he surprised me a lot with his fucking pace. A couple of times he had to cover so many yards. And he did it surprisingly fast. And Christ alive, if that volley had gone in, I think, Christ, that would have been quite something. But yeah, was there any particular performances, poor or good, do you want to shout out, Mark?
I don't think there's any outstanding performances. The same kind of Warriors did what they do quite regularly, but especially Alfie, I will say that, you know, he did run his tabs off for very little reward. But one player that hasn't been mentioned, there's Mark Howard, whose distribution I think has been quite poor.
Just to say that, yeah.
Yeah, that's appalling, and it was so
I think his kicking's been pretty poor, and it surprises me. I'm not with, you know, he's I do think he's a decent keeper. I don't think there's a great deal between him and Anik, but just in the last couple of games, I don't know what's happened. One of his chief weapons, that sort of early kick and the pinpoint accuracy he used to be able to deliver, seems to have just gone off the boil a little bit. So
even at the start of the season, his kicks were a bit wayward. You know, they could either go straight over everyone or straight out for a throw-in. I mean, the Oldham game was the worst part. Just, I think, probably the wind and the pitch and what have you. But when I think in my five things, but I just said, you know, Howard's got a chance to prove that it's not that bad. You know, with the good conditions, I mean, the pitch was amazing last night, and the weather was fine. But Howard again struggled to distribute well. I mean, there's not much we can do. I mean, I asked Chris the other day on Facebook, what do you think about Jake Turner? I mean, the lad's playing for England under 18s, and I know he's trying to get playing experience head in there with Howard, but I do believe he deserves a chance. I mean, whether he waits until Peterborough for that, you know, should we have gone up by that point or what? But I think Jake Turner deserves a chance. Does anyone else think so?
I think if we were to seal things against Port Vale, I think you could argue it'd be worth a go against Peterborough, most definitely. When else is he going to get a chance? And we've already read the stories of the team sniffing around him. So, you know, if we can hold him to the club a little bit more closely by giving him his first his debut.
Yeah.
It's going to put us in good stead going forward.
I think he should play against Peterborough, I think.
I think at this stage, especially if it isn't sorted, then that'd be certainly a risky thing to do. And if Parkinson did it, he'd get bothered.
Oh, yeah, I'm not advocating that. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that sort of environment's the right time to throw somebody in for the Rob Hall. That's the right time to put somebody in like that. You know, it can backfire quite as easily.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's an interesting point. He's obviously got a lot of good calibre, and hopefully he does stick around and we get to see more of him next season. But I agree with Mike on Mark Howard's kicking. I think I've never seen a keeper kick the ball so low before so many times. There was one point where he kicked it low and like a Bury player wasn't expecting it, and he ended up heading it onto Lafondra. So it worked out all right in the end. But yeah, his kicking was poor. And he was also very slow, like surprisingly slow, on getting throws out and stuff from when counter-attacking opportunities were on. And yeah, he did stunt us quite a bit, and his distribution wasn't good at all. But suppose the question is now, Mark, and everyone, since I asked this on the last show, but Mark, will we still go up? Will we get the automatics?
Yes, 100%. No question.
That's a lot of confidence. That's Chris-level confidence. Chris, have you wavered?
No, and that's even after a day at work talking to the world's most negative Bolton fan who works at our place. I've attempted to get him on the site, you know, just to live up to the stereotype. Right. I still think we'll do it. I still think we've got the chops to get it done. It's just not easy with Bolton, is it? It never is. I'm grateful. This little bit of drama is nothing. This is how it always used to be. It always used to be last minute Larry type efforts, and I'm glad to see it. Not everything's changed. I think we'll get a positive result one way or the other against Port Vale. What will happen elsewhere is not under our control. But either way, I think, the Peterborough party's on.
I'm scared because I tell you exactly what's going to happen. We're going to draw against Port Vale, Fleetwood are going to win, and us and Fleetwood are both going to be on the same amount of points going into the last day of the season, and it's going to be shit, pantingly, fucking nerve-wracking. It's going to be horrendous. And as I said on the last show, do not trust Bolton in high-pressure situations because we do not have a good history of it in recent years. But Will, what do you think? Because I'm scared. I'm very scared.
I think we'll still do it. I mean, it's ours to lose at the end of the day. I mean, from what I've heard, 4 points, people seem to think is enough. But as I said, I'd rather not leave it until the last game of the season. But with Bolton Wanderers, we don't do things simply. So I can see it going to the last day. I think a draw is probably nearly inevitable against Port Vale, just the way we're playing at the minute. But I can see he's taking it against Peterborough, to be honest.
We can only hope. And unless there's anything, any other topics people want to discuss, I think we can move into questions. Is there anything else on anyone's mind?
Well, one last little question, just an interesting thing for you guys. Again, talking at work today, I was discussing the players that might be able to stay with us for next season out of the current crop. I don't want to step on anyone's toes in terms of a question coming up, but I could only really stick on Beavers and Vela maybe out of last night's starting 11, who I think will be guaranteed a place in the team next year, or that, you know, we probably couldn't do much better than at this minute in time. Just wondering if anybody else has any agreements or disagreements on that.
I'm not sure, and I said there's a question coming up, but I'm not sure on contract situations and the like, but I'd imagine at the starting 11, I'd imagine Vela, Wita, Beavers, probably Moraes, he's probably earned another contract. Lafondre.
If we could sign Lafondre,
well,
yeah.
That is the issue. I think we still have Lafondre. And, well, I doubt Spearing, because I imagine he's on far too much money. Prattley, probably, because he's on too much money and nobody will be able to buy him off us, so Prattley will probably still be about. Derek, I don't know if he'll be a starter, but he'll probably still be knocking about. And hopefully Taylor. I'm hoping we do sign Taylor, because I think he's been very good. I don't know, as we said on the last show, I don't know if he'll do it on the championship, but he deserves a chance if nobody else wants him, and if he's a free, I'm not sure about that. But, yeah, Mark, what do you reckon to that?
No, I don't think you're too far off. I think just on Spearing there, I think his attitude has been exemplary. I don't think, you know, they can have a single complaint with the way that he's carried himself and worked this season. So I would imagine whilst he may well be at the top end of their budget next season, they will be doing everything they can to keep him at the club. I'm very sure of that.
I think he needs to be captain next season again, Spearing, because even though Prattley, he seems to be quite hard-headed in the middle, you know, and he controls the team very well. Spearing's got more passion of a player than I've ever seen since Kevin Davis, maybe. You know, I just think that he's someone who just wanted it more than anything last night. I know that yellow card kind of
celebrated that tackle. Top. I don't even care, that tackle on Barnett, I fucking hate Barnett.
That tackle was brilliant, honestly.
It just sums
up his kind of persona, I think. He's just a brilliant little pit bull in the middle that we have, and I hope we will keep him next season.
Well, we can only hope. So moving on to some questions from our adoring public. First up from Fallen Starks 76. Why do fans know more than football managers? It was obvious that the team that finished should have started. I can see it. Why can't Parker?
All supporters seem to know more than football managers, don't they? That seems to be a running theme on social media. Look, I mean, it's his job. It's his prerogative. His decisions to make. You know, and he'll live and die by them. And be judged on the results that they get. I don't subscribe to the idea that that football fans know more than football managers. There's a million and one reasons that they probably don't realise why he's making the decisions he's making. Even I know more things behind the scenes and the reasons he's making certain decisions. Sometimes they're not fit for public use and dissemination, but I think it's a lot more complex an exercise than maybe people think who are just mouthing off 140 characters on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Put it that way.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think he's definitely talking about you there, Dan. Oh. Definitely talking about you. That's the way it goes, isn't it? And I was trying to work out whether the question was being sarcastic or whether the question was being literal.
I think it's more
part
of a
parcel.
I think it's half parcel. And half, like. If it's when things seem so obvious to 20,000 people, it can be frustrating. If the
and I think that's when you, yeah, but I think that's when you've got to appreciate then that there's probably something behind the scenes that's making them think that, unless it's, you know, Coyle or Megson, in which case it's just that they don't know what they're doing. I think largely Parkinson, he's not done much that you can really say, you know, what the hell was that all about. So I think you've got to sometimes put a bit of faith in the manager, but ultimately the day that a manager comes along where I agree with him 100%, it'll be the day I start following football, to be honest, because that's one of them sort of dogs and cats making friends kind of world-ending sort of scenarios for me. It's weird with Parkinson, from my point of view, in the last few years, to find a Bolton manager that I actually don't have many issues with, you know? I mean, there's obviously a few bits and pieces. I'd rather he was a bit more attacking at times. I'd rather he did certain things differently, but ultimately, he's proven to be, you know, a decent guy, a decent manager at this level. So ultimately, I don't really have an issue with it. Fans criticising and second guessing managers will happen till the end of time, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. And Will?
I agree. I mean, just as Chris said, Parkinson, you know, he's not daft, and I do appreciate the job he does. You know, he's not a big loudmouth. You know, he just gets his head down and gets on with the job. And I think he's far from tactically inept. I think he can. On stuff, he's just not sure what to do in this situation. But for me, Henry and Long should have started last night. I think Henry possibly in the middle instead of Derek. But I don't know where Long maybe would have come in. I think he's best as a super sub, but yeah, arguably. Those two should have started, but as far as what we were saying about fans no more than managers, I disagree with that. But everyone's got their own opinions.
Okay. At Danny Romulo, just without any vowels, asks, how many of the current first teamers are likely to be renewed if we don't go up from a financial standpoint? I think it's more one for Mark, this.
Ooh, it's a tough one for Mark, that one. There's so much at the moment that's up in the air, that will only be decided if and when we know, also when rather, know what division we're playing in. Because, I still think there is some degree of investment that will have to come in if they go into the Championship particularly, probably hinging on going into the Championship. So, it will be a completely different ball game at that point in time, the budget-wise. But if they don't, then I think there's going to have to be a lot of rationalisation. There's got to, definitely have to bring the wage bill down a lot, unless, some white knight comes in. But there's all sorts, isn't there? There's the embargo that needs sorting. Yep. This whole share situation with Ken and Dino, which is ongoing. There's a million one things, and it's almost not entirely dissimilar to what's the situation we were in last year. There's not a great deal that's been completely sorted. I know there's been little victories along the way, little sort of debts squared away here and there, but it's not completely fixed by any stretch of the imagination. The results and what's been going on the pitch has been a lovely distraction, and it's meant that we're not talking about finances every week, but actually some of the big questions are still to be answered.
Of course.
Am I right in thinking that? Sorry, one second. Okay. Am I right in thinking that there's never been a team that's been promoted when they're under embargo?
I can't find one, Chris. I've tried as well. I've asked everybody that I can think of. The only person I'm waiting for an answer from is Brownie, because he said to me that they came up under an embargo at Southend, and I just wanted to double check that, but. I don't think I've certainly not come across one yet, put it that way.
Okay. History, man. I know we're sort of loosely under an embargo given what's gone on, and fair play to the Andersons for the way they've managed to wangle that one. I just thought it was an interesting point.
Well, next up from @onsort Chris Seddon, he asks, if we go up, which positions, including managerial, need strengthening, if any, Chris?
Very interesting, especially the managerial one, because, I can't ever shake the suspicion that the manager that we've got is a manager for this level. We might have to look to change, even if he makes a good start to the Championship. But I hope he does stay, because I think he's earned that opportunity. I know our sort of famed impatience with managers might not necessarily see him through to Christmas. You never truly know. But yeah, I think Parkinson deserves a chance to stay.
Anything else in position-wise?
Just mainly what I said before, really. I think Beavers and Vella would maybe be my only two that I wouldn't necessarily look to upgrade. But again, like Mark said as well, following that, have we got a pot to piss in? I don't know. Probably not.
Will?
I think we're reasonably good at the moment. I mean, obviously, we're missing a solid right back. I mean, I know we've got Larry Wilson, but whether he's of Championship standard, I don't know. But I think we could do with possibly a solid right back. If we manage to keep Andy Taylor and Lafonja, I think we're all right for left-back and strikers. Possibly another central midfielder. One who has caught my eye this season, actually, Stephen Dawson at Scunthorpe. I know he's a captain, but he's like another Jay Spearing. I mean, I'd love to have him in my centre midfield, a pairing of that.
Oh, good shout. Bowden at Bristol as well. I thought Bowden was excellent.
Yeah, Billy Bowden, yeah. Obviously, James Horn, as you said before, would be all right, but I doubt that would happen with us being rivals. But I think we're all right, strength for positions. Manager, I rate Parky completely. I think even if we do go up, I think he then deserves a chance to prove what where he can get us in the championship.
I think he'd be if the he's just got us up into embargo. I do. I think with the way we're playing, we're suiting for a relegation scrap, and that's undoubtedly what a first year in the championship would be. So I think he'd at least so. Like, I don't see any evidence as to why, because he's the best. This is the best defence we've had since Sam Allardyce was manager.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Parky will stay, and he should do really, because he's like you said, he's just been one of those figures who've kind of been unfaultable this season. And I think the way he's managed the team and just come out and he's put out a decent team every week. You know, his team selection's rarely faultable. I know we've asked him to change it up a bit recently, but other than that, I think he's the perfect man for the job, really.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think, Matt?
I'm not sure how we can have a debate about a manager that's got a club up in second place in an embargo, whether he should be there next season. That seems a bit bizarre to me. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to need quality in the championship, aren't they? The thing is, since the last time we were there, it's gone up a level, and the amount of money that players are earning, the amount of money that teams are spending is significantly larger now. You know, the Villas and the Newcastles and the Sheffield Wednesdays have totally altered the landscape now with the money that's coming down from owners and Premier Leagues and such like. You know, we've got Jordan Rhodes on 55 grand a week, and we're complaining about paying Gary Medine 7.5. So it's a very different ball game, and it's going to matter more what goes on at boardroom level this summer than necessarily what goes on in the transfer market.
Mark, have you heard anything about this whispered Chinese deal that's on the table? I know, sorry to throw this at you without any forewarning, but just a whisper that was doing the rounds online earlier on today.
There's a lot happening. I mean, the digital bank lot have obviously set up shop now in the Macron, and there are a lot of people coming and going. You know, delegations from China, people visiting. So you know, to keep track on it is difficult. There's a lot of nods, a lot of winks whenever you ask about investment and are you talking about people. I'll be very, very surprised if it doesn't hinge on going up into the championship, because, you know, anybody who looks at the infrastructure and the stuff that the club have got and the fact that they're one step away from the riches of the Premier League, I think it'd be a very good investment at that point in time, but only at that point in time.
Can I just throw something at you, Mark, quickly? I heard a couple of months ago. The thing with Macron, have we still got them next season? Have they still got their stadium rights and everything?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a fluid situation the last time I asked about it, but it's a little while ago. They certainly met him over the kits, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's got 12 months left to run the stadium naming rights. It has been under review, but right. as far as I'm aware at this moment, it's still in place.
Right, okay, thanks for that.
Super White Smurf, Aaron Ian Firth asks, and I think somewhat ironically, should Wheater or Beavers play up front from the start? Mark, I know.
Ian.
I think.
Bollocks.
I know you've got opinions
bollocks,
on this.
Bollocks, bollocks. No, hey, sorry.
Bolton have Pryors, Matt Mills against Liverpool up front. That went well.
That was a disaster.
So what do you think,
Mark? Yeah. Well, Emil Heskey played centre-half. How did that go?
why did we never play Paul Warhurst up front? That always bothered me. We never gave him a chance.
It's crazy that you think, in arguably the two most important games in, you know, years and years, that you would want to put David Wheater, or, you know, I'm sure it's tongue-in-cheeky and the Mark Beavers thing, but, you know, yes for 5 minutes, yes for 10 minutes, and Wheats has got a great touch on him. I mean, you saw that volley the other night. You know, he's no mug around the penalty box. He's got 7 goals already this season, but movement wise and, you know, just the technique is just no.
Why do you think it didn't happen in the last 5 minutes of last night's game, Mark?
Because I meant to make this point earlier, I completely forgot. Parky didn't want to gamble. He didn't want to lose the point, is the answer. I think he lost the point, and he regretted at Oldham going for broke, for going for that win and putting on 3 attacking substitutes. And that ended up costing him, and he said it after the game. He sort of regretted doing that. So it was always going to be a question of how much is he going to gamble and how many is he going to make. So I think if he was going for broke, you'd have seen Solomon Otterbaugh come on and really try and stretch it, or you know, because Berry was sitting too far back to bring Longy on. So there was no space really in behind. They were sat on the edge of the penalty box. There was no real point in bringing Chris Long on, in my personal opinion. But maybe to get a bit more width.
Yeah, I understand. I'm guessing
the reason is he wanted to keep...
Okay.
I'm guessing it's a resounding no from everyone else as well?
Yeah. I mean, last 5-10 minutes, yeah. But no.
I mean, I could make a joke about an immovable stump playing up front all season, but I'm bigger than that, so I won't do it.
At Don the Money Road asks, are Bolton fans an especially negative breed, Chris?
Yeah, without question, the absolute worst in the world, mate. Worst supporters in the world. Simple answer.
What do you think?
Me included.
You're
me
the
definitely.
Most positive bastard in the fucking world, Chris, at the minute.
Yeah, aye, that's the drugs, mate.
Oh, aye. What do you think, Mark?
You get moaning minis everywhere, really. I used to cover Mac Town and think there can't be anywhere else in the world as miserable as this for, you know, a team of the size of Macclesfield Town who had got promotion from what was League 2 to League 1, and you're thinking, how can it possibly be better than this? How are people possibly moaning about this? And yet people still did. I think just every club has them, and... you know, there's plenty of them at Bolton, and they're certainly not shy of voicing their opinion, I can tell you that.
I can imagine you're right at the forefront of that. What do you think, Will? Are we?
Yeah, exactly the same as Mark. I think everyone's got a minority of fans who were always like that. I mean, there are a considerable few at the Wanderers, but no, I think everyone's got them, to be honest.
Our own Cult of Wilson at, do you think... we're at risk of losing Alf signing on a permanent deal if we don't start playing to his strengths, Mark?
No. Alf will dig in. You know, he'll carry on going. That's the way he is, I think. Because I think he knows that one of those chances is going to drop for him in the next couple of games, and he's going to be the hero again. Mm-hmm. I genuinely do. I mean, he's hit the bar twice in the last two games. I mean, you know, 6 inches. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I still don't know for definite, but it does look like it. Yeah, he'll be fine. I mean, you know, interestingly, I spoke to him a few weeks back and said, you know, what's your feelings on it? And he said, you know, I'd love to stay. You know, the club have been fantastic with me. We've got this rapport with the fans. You know, everything's there if a deal can be done. And it was all the ifs all the way through the business of the interview, and I thought, well, yeah, there's still something to be sorted, because I think he can command a fee, you know, in terms of a contract. He'll be, you know, valuable property in the summer, rather.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty confident. As you say, he's pretty obvious he likes it here. He's got, like, a relationship with the fans. The fans love him and have reacted so well to his return. I'm pretty certain he'll be staying, and as he said, I think he will retire at Bolton. At Johnny Eccles, he asks, if Gary Medine is to leave in the summer and Parky plays the same style next season, who should replace him, Chris?
Oh, Christ. I don't know. Who's a good target, man?
No idea.
I thought... yeah, exactly. Neither do I. I don't know anything. Let's go for somebody maybe dropping down from the Premier League, some young buck of a decent height. I always quite like that Smith guy that's playing for QPR at the minute, when he played for Leeds, I think.
Matt
he did.
Smith. Was it Matt Smith?
Matt Smith, that's right.
I always thought he was all right. I don't know how he's done at QPR this season, but that's the sort of man I'd be thinking of. Maybe someone with a bit of something to prove. You know, like when we signed Lafondre in the first place, but one that's four inches taller.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Will? Do you know of any?
No, I was going to say, I mean, Chris and James Vaughan before. I mean, he's not massive, but he's definitely a proven goal scorer. But other than that, I think Matt Smith's a good shout. I know Rudy Gusted's dropping down. I mean, that is wages must be extortionate, but I think that's punching above our weight, I think, a little bit.
I think Middlesbrough signed him for next season to play in the Championship, I think, didn't they, about anything else?
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Yeah.
Mark, do you know of any lower league target men who do a job? Because I know none.
I was always surprised they didn't get Hansen in the end.
I was going to actually say Hansen, because he was very good against us when we played Sheffield United the other week.
Yeah, I'd be interested. I mean, obviously, he goes back with Parkey, and he's still racing. There's a few knocking around. I mean, I think Parkinson at the moment is very much keeping his options open. He hasn't got a clue what he's got to spend, because I don't think anybody's even broached the idea of budgets yet. So I think they'll be covering all their bases at the moment. And I do think the kind of the influences they've got now with the ownership, that the target is not necessarily going to be English, and not lower league signings or Premier League youngsters. I think you're going to be looking far and wide in Europe.
The conversation that we had with Lee Anderson that day that Liam and I went and met them at the club, along with a couple of other blog sites, indicated very much the same. There was talk on the day about link-ups with Portuguese clubs, about giving their kids a shot window to play for Bolton in the Championship, to maybe see if we could generate some sort of sell-on for them, you know, which I think would benefit us. Obviously, we're not looking at... I'd hope that we're not going to take in the sort of Rochinis of this world. They're never going to amount to anything, you know. And they were talking as well about that Tammy Abraham as well. It was between us and Bristol City. So that's the sort of player I'd expect us to be going for. A sort of, you know, what's his name at Chelsea, like Solanke, and that is Isaiah Brown. People like that, you know. They're not necessarily household names, but people who've come with a bit of a pedigree and able to make a name for themselves and benefit their parent club. And I think that's where we can make an equivalent move to when we had Sturridge and Wilshire back in the day, but just at a slightly more sort of home bargains type level.
Yeah, certainly.
I was going to say, I had an odd one. You'll probably disapprove with it, but I mean, I went to watch Accrington Stanley. On Tuesday. Billy Key, he plays up front for them. I mean, you can imagine their standard of play. It's just constant oofball. But he's only about as tall as Alf, but he managed to knock down absolutely everything and knock it straight on. But I just thought he's brilliant. I mean, it's probably unrealistic, because obviously we're looking above us, but I thought he did remarkably well for that standard.
nobody said Akin Fenway yet, if we're looking for a target man.
And there's a good reason for that, because he's not really. We could get that Reed guy from Lincoln, the big fucking
Matt Reed.
Shithouse. Yeah, that's the one. He was a fucking... He was a battering ram of sorts.
There was a story going around. So, sorry, Dan, one final one to Mark. There was a story in the January that they were having a look at Taylor at Wimbledon. Do you know if there's anything in that?
He has been mentioned, actually, yeah. More from kind of ownership side than Parkey. But I think there are, just to kind of broach both questions, I think there are two kind of shortlists going on, because... You know, both the Anderson lads are extremely well connected, and they, you know, they tap certain ponds that maybe are not as traditional, let's say, as the kind of more traditional route that Parkey and Tim Breaker and Chief Scouts using. So I think it could be good for Bolton, but I think there's always going to be a marriage between players that have been brought in because of the owner's contacts and the ones that they wanted, and also the ones that Phil Parkinson wanted. And I think we've had this discussion maybe about Adam Lafondre not necessarily at the time being 100% a Parkinson signing, more one that was put there and said, you know, do you want him? And it ended up being a yes, and I think it's worked out. But I think there'll be a lot of that next summer. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it works between all the options he's got and which path he feels is going to be the correct one and the way he wants to play.
Yes, it's certainly going to be an interesting summer no matter what happens. But if the unthinkable happens, Matt, and we do not go up via the automatics, or do not go up at all, how catastrophic will staying in League One be financially? And I know we touched on it a little bit, but financially and, you know, all the deals and things that the Andersons are trying to set up. And does Parkinson survive us not going up after having a seven-point advantage with five games to go?
I don't think there's any question that he'd survive that. I don't think you can possibly ask a manager to play in a transfer embargo the entire year, do as well as they've done, and then, you know, knife him in the back. That would take a very interesting decision indeed. You know, it's difficult. I mean, it's going to work about £6 million in terms of the central funding, the sponsorship and everything, promotion, if they get there. If not, then there's all sorts. The Blue Marble stuff has got to be sorted. They'll have to find some way of refinancing that without that kind of cash flow. They'll have to find a way of bringing fans in, because whilst the numbers have been very, very good, would that be the same again with another, you know, 12 months down the line, the same sort of novelty about the, you know, the teams they're playing, etc. I'm not sure there would be. It'd be a tough task, a hell of a tough task to get it pumped up again and to go again at this level, I think.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I agree fully. I think a lot of the excitement from this year has come from renewing old rivalries, Rochdale and Bury and so on. And the Championship next year doesn't have that same attraction, I think. You know, should Wigan and Blackburn go down, as it seems they might, I think that only leaves Preston as a sort of local rival, which, you know, is one thing. It's not really a famed historic rivalry to get the blood pumping. I hope that they manage to keep everything in as they have, because the sort of feel good factor, winning football matches, it's a ridiculously novel feeling for us over the last sort of 4 or 5 years. And I'd hate to think that, and it harks back a little bit to the point I made about Parkinson earlier, that we'd see, you know, a slow start, like a Dougie Friedman no winning 10 sort of thing, to see Parkinson get potted as a result. So yeah, it's hard. I think we've got no choice but to get promoted if we want to be anything other than a yo-yo club. But although with the landscape changing, with the signings that other Championship clubs are making, like Newcastle spending 55 million quid, granted they recouped a lot of that as well, but how are we meant to compete with that, with our band, the ragtag band of bloody free transfers and loans? It's going to be virtually impossible, and I find it hard to envisage anything other than a season of sort of manful struggle should we go up. But hey, you know, it's never been easy for Bolton, has it ever?
Mm-hmm. And your thoughts, Will?
Yeah, I completely agree with Chris on that, really. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Chris, do you have any questions? Shall I read them off the Twitter, or do you want to say them yourself?
Yeah, because, I mean, at that time I wasn't due to join you, boys, so yeah, feel free to read them out, and I'll listen to the way that you enunciate and see if it matches the same nuance that I tried to put in.
Well, Mark, do you think the current mob have it in them to survive in the Championship, or do you expect major changes? Also, do you think Parky has the chops to be a good manager in the Championship? Will he have to change his style a bit to cope? End quote.
Perfect, that, Dan. Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
That was very good delivery, yeah. I'll take the second one first with Parky. I think his record in the Championship's fairly average, isn't it? I think he had a season-ish at Hull. And then with Colchester, I don't think he ever did manage in the Championship. He might have gone straight to Hull from there. But, he's got something to prove, hasn't he? The sort of second tier level. I don't think you can get away with being quite as direct as they are now. I think there's going to have to be a bit more to it. There's going to have to be more pace in the team. There's no question about that, because I think if we found out anything last season in all the dirge that we watched, it's that, you know, Wanderers were running in quicksand at times. You know, the pace is very much part of the game at Championship level, and certainly hasn't been in League One. So I think he's got a lot of rebuilding to do. Segueing into the first question, they've got to find a lot more quality, and they've got to find money to find that quality. And I think he said about the strikers before, you know, signing Adam Lafondre, but it's not just Lafondre. I think they're going to need two or three of that calibre player, options, different options, whether it be a target man like Medine or indeed Gary Medine. I think you're going to need another one of that quality. And plus, you know, another bit more pace as well up front. Somebody permanent signs. You forget how many loans we've got in this team at the moment. You know, I would like to see a more solid base, personally.
Mm-hmm. So, unless anyone has got any more questions, Chris, Will?
No. Just a quick one about Viv. I wrote an article on him the other day just saying I think he deserves a chance. Obviously, Park signed him in January. He hasn't had much of a look in because he's wanted to keep the same team. Do you think there's a chance that he'll be kept on next season? Because, I mean, when he came on at Bradford, he just looked to change the game, him and Henry. And I just thought that he definitely deserves a chance next season. What are the chances of that, do you think?
I'd say they're outside chances. You know, he's... I think he was signed...
one, just saying that Parkin made a lot of signings, like in both summer and in January, and a lot of them have actually gone out off on loan, or they've just not made the squad week in, week out. And it just begs the question, you know, was he happy with the signings he's made, or does he regret them, or what do you think?
Now, I think he made that signing at the time they were kind of transitioning from the 4-2-3-1 to the 3-5-2, and I don't think there's anywhere really to stick Solomon Ottobor in a 3-5-2. Yeah. So he's paid the price for that. I know Birmingham wanted him playing down the middle a lot, which I don't think you could, but that's what they did want. That's why they loaned him out, because I think Bolton thought that they could play him down the middle when they got him. He's been a bit unlucky. I think there's something about him. He's got something. I would have liked to have seen him on that left-hand side of the 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
But if you haven't got the tools to play it, it's unfortunate. You know, you just fall by the wayside a little bit, don't you?
Yeah.
I do think he will regret signing him as much as he probably let Proctor go to get him in.
Yeah.
And I think down the line now, they probably would have rather have kept somebody who could have fit in the Medin role rather than having somebody who sat on the bench.
And I know based on last night as well, obviously you said Clayton just didn't make it. And I know he wasn't Parky signing, but do you think he rates him enough to then keep him on another season, or do you think he'll be off in June as well?
It's very difficult. I mean, he hasn't taken his chances, I'll say that.
Yeah.
He hasn't, and it pains me to say that, because I think Max is a fantastic lad, but I think he might benefit from a fresh start.
Well, I think the only thing that might work in Clayton's favour is I can't imagine he's the most expensive player we've got in our books. And strength in depth is everything. We haven't really got a very strong bench. I wonder whether Clayton will get another 12 months just based on that, on the economics of it alone.
I think if he can keep fit, then yeah, he'll probably get another contract, but let's hope so.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, everyone, that has been Line of the Street episode 76. Thank you very much for joining us. I hope you feel lighter. I hope you feel a bit more positive about yourselves after I think the four of us were rather positive, and you know, we were measured. I think it was pretty good. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter @Obrowski. You can follow Chris on Twitter @19manning83. You can follow Mark on Twitter @MarkIsles, and Will, I have forgotten your Twitter, so please tell the world.
It's just Will J with a 1.
There you go. Go and follow us all. Of course, you can follow us all @LineofESD, apart from Mark, who you can also get on @TheBoltonNews or the BN. Do you wanna hit him up, Mark?
No, they know where I am.
Of course, the button is, you know it. So you can get us all on us free at lineofesuite.com for all the articles and whatnot. And, well, there's nothing else to say. It's time to say goodbye. So say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye. Say goodbye.
One day. One day. No, goodbye, Will.
Fuck this. Goodbye. Say goodbye, Mark.
I'm just going to say goodbye. I want to get invited back.
Come on.
I respect
that. Goodbye, Mark.
I'm going to have to think of a new outro, because it's just fucking vandals. It's goodbye from me, Sarah.